This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hello, this is Julia Zamiro, and you're listening to Joy 94.9. Lucky you.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. I'm Chris, and with me today we've got...
Gordon.
And...
Phil.
Here I am.
Isn't that good?
I scared myself.
You're there.
Thanks very much for joining us. And first off, before we get into the meet and greet of our show, we just need to explain what happened last week. Our show didn't go to air. Well, it did go to air.
A little bit of it.
Yes, but somehow there was a transmitter misfortune, and after about 13 minutes, you didn't get anything else. So we've had to recycle a little bit of last week's show because it was a very, very important show. But we'll be speaking of lots of things on this Our History program.
If this is a recycle, are we on a tandem?
That's a dual cycle, not a recycle. A recycle would be if you ride to work and then have to ride to work again.
Well, yeah, we're into cycling.
And I don't know how that's beneficial at all, so stop recycling, people.
Thank you, Phil. And Gordon, please don't confuse Philip. He's sitting here with a frown on his face.
I'll be trying to explain what you're saying, and it's getting harder every week.
Been There, Done That is Joy's gay and lesbian history program. And when we've run out of gay and lesbian activities to talk about for icons and dicons, then we'll bring in some local events that are still affecting our lives, because we're in a society where things happen, rain falls on all of us. It's not selective. I know it doesn't. Sometimes it feels as though the rain will dump on you only, but or me only.
And actually, history does repeat itself.
So,
point learning it.
No, are you going to be the person who said, nah, nah?
No. Because if you don't learn from history, you're in danger of repeating what has actually happened.
Right. So if you know you've got a black cloud hanging over you, you're likely to have rain, so you should be quickly looking for your bonnet or your parasol.
Yes, that's right, yes.
I generally look for a shelter of some sort, but anyway.
On today's program, what are we talking about? Well, Mr. Philip is going to be telling us about The Simpsons. We've got a birthday girl here in Leslie Gore, 2nd of May 1946 she was born, and we'll play a bit of music from her as well. We need to recycle the article about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and we will be talking about how the military forces have actually been able to address that trauma in their ranks. And there's a little royal connection there as well. We'll be talking about events in history that affect us even to this day. Coral Sea, Port Arthur in Tasmania. There was a problem there some years ago, but it still affects us, and there's still an echo happening around the world at the moment with that. We might have time to speak about Keith Herring's, a beautiful gay artist who died at the age of 31 and whose work we would know because it's so distinctive. And we have got another little recycled story about London and the bombing of a gay pub recently, like in the last days of last century, which is only about 17 years ago.
Is it that long ago?
It seems like yesterday.
It was like yesterday.
Well, let's talk about the birthday girl, Leslie Gore.
Why was she called Little Leslie? Was it because she was very tall, or was it, because they always called her Little Leslie Gore as one of their sort of names for her.
I don't know. I haven't got her height measurement. Leslie Sue Goldstein.
Goldstein.
The modern generation mightn't realise that she's had a history in music and TV running from 63 with her first hit, which was It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To.
Oh, what happened at the party, dear heart?
Well, yes, indeed.
To the song.
But she in fact composed some more hits for the 1980s film Fame.
Oh, that was a good film, that.
That was a good film, But she, as well as her singing, she hosted some gay and lesbian-oriented public TV on the PBS channel in the US until 2014. And she actually also made a bit of a hit with the song Sunshine, Lollipops and Rainbows, which we will play a little bit later of, a song by the rag pianist Marvin Hamlisch.
Yes, so get your diabetes kits out because there's going to be a lot of sugar towards the end of the segment.
It's My Party actually sold over 1 million copies and was first, a gold record for your first hit. That's not bad going.
Pretty good going when you consider the competition that they're usually under in those situations.
Yeah.
But it would have been a subject matter that a lot of people could relate to.
Yes, that's right.
It's My Party and I'll cry if I want to.
That's right, yes.
And also would have affected the girls.
Oh, yeah. In 1967, she featured in 2 episodes of the Batman TV show.
Oh, that was quality acting.
Yeah, oh, there you go.
who was Batman?
Oh, that was, what's his name? Is the mayor of Quahog.
You see, I'm sorry.
West, was it somebody?
Yes.
That was Adam West?
Adam West, thank you.
Yeah. And who was his little sidekick, Robin?
Robin was very pretty. I can't remember his name.
Yes, he was, wasn't he? And they, but they also, everybody thought that they were partners, of course, as well.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, it was a whole thing about Batman. But we're not talking about Batman and Robin. We're talking about Leslie Gore.
Yeah. In 2004, Leslie Gore featured in the PBS TV series In the Life, listing LGBT issues. And after a show in 2005 where she was sprung out after Ellen, I think was the show it was called, she revealed that she was a lesbian.
Oh, my God.
And she'd been in a relationship since 1982. So 23 years later, she was outed.
Yeah, but they probably, all her friends probably knew about it anyhow, because you don't, you're not in a relationship for 23 years without your immediate friends and probably family knowing about it.
That's true. What did she say here? I just lived my kind of life naturally, and I did what I wanted to. I didn't avoid anything. I didn't put it in anybody's face. In 2015, she died of lung cancer, but she was still with her partner at that stage. They'd been together for 33 years, so who says gay relationships can't work?
Of course they can. Friends of mine have been together for nearly 50 years.
Yeah.
And one of them passed away, and another couple were for 47 years or something or other. Yeah, so we can have long relationships. Well, I've been with my partner for 11 years.
It doesn't fit the stereotype, so
all right.
It's a positive thing. So who's going to tell that story?
And all those songs that she made hits of, Leslie made herself the voice of teenage girls aggrieved by fickle boyfriends, moving quickly from tearful self-pity to fierce self-assertion.
Well done, Leslie.
Well done indeed. But as well as that, the music is featured in TV, so I'm told.
I know one track that's been used on The Simpsons.
Yes.
And speaking of people who've just turned 30.
Yeah.
They're not people. But the show has just turned 30.
And they've never aged.
No, that's the beauty of animation. Because if you hire humans, one of their major flaws is they get older every single year.
Yes, and they don't quite look as well as they should do when they're getting older,
do they? It's pretty hard to play 8 years old when you're 25. Which would be the case.
The Simpsons were very unusual. Didn't they first appear on the
Tracy Ullman show?
Yeah.
It was just literally a 5-minute cartoon sketch, very crudely drawn. You can see Matt Groening's sense of humour because it was pretty blunt at the time. I mean, they only had very little time to get their story across. But the characters were crudely drawn and the vocals were very basic.
Did Marge have her blue hair?
Yeah, but they were all hunched somewhat.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But they had yellow skin. How could they be a typical family?
Well, Matt Groening did that as a joke.
Oh.
It was quite deliberate to give them yellow skin so that American TV audiences would get up and try to adjust the colour. And, of course, they couldn't.
No.
Because frequently on American TV with their old NTSC system.
Not the same colour.
Well, never the same colour twice. But, your skin tones could go red, green or blue or whatever just at the drop of a hat.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But, The Simpsons, they started off and got universally panned. not from the Tracey Ullman show, but once they got onto Fox on their own half hour, and Bart was seen as an underachiever. And
he has been through the whole show, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, that's actually the point the Simpsons are trying to make. And Homer is an alcoholic, and Marge is seen as, you know, somebody desperately looking for attention with 6 feet of blue hair. And it's just, it was so panned, and there was nothing nice said about it. And it would start criticizing American institutions and sort of turning the camera back on itself.
Philip, was that because Americans don't understand irony or that sort of wit?
But yeah, they don't, and they don't take criticism well.
No.
Or they didn't like that they were making fun of the American family,
mm-hmm,
or showing the failings, and it's what they've been doing for 30 years.
And doing it so well.
They came to Australia and showed some, frankly, not very positive things about us. Our judicial system was shown to be Parliament sitting. And then Bart had made a reverse charge phone call to Australia and refused to pay for it. So they went to Bob, who was the Prime Minister, lying on a lilo on a dam on a farm. And so they brought the Simpsons out to Australia to apologise. And instead of apologising, Bart mooned the government. And they said, well, that's now punishable by the boot. So they get this big oversized leather shoe onto the Prime Minister's foot, and they go to kick him, and he jumps out of the way and escapes. And so, yeah, we were shown to be a little bit backward and had a very funny accent.
Obviously, Johnny Depp hadn't seen that episode.
No. I think Johnny Depp was probably at the bank saying sorry. But that's another story.
Yeah.
So how was Leslie Gore's hit song featured?
Well, there was a Thelma and Louise styled episode.
Yeah.
It's not a rip-off, not copying and anything like that. And
so Marge went off with a woman in a car.
Yes, a new neighbour who was recently divorced, but they weren't allowed to talk about the D word. And so they were running away from the police on a desert road, and Chief Wiggum was behind them, and he was explaining that he was trying to get their position right.
Yeah.
And he said, they're just under the noon sun now.
Oh, right.
So he's trying to report back to base as if to give them some kind of indication where they were.
Oh, God.
But so Marge put in a tape because they didn't know they were being chased. And she put in a song that was Leslie Gore's Sunshine Buttercups. She said, oh, no, turn the tape over, and they're listening to something much harder.
Yeah.
Heavy. And then we cross back to the police car with Chief Wiggum and Homer on board. And he puts in Leslie Gore's Sunshine Lollipops and leaves it on. Because that was his chase music.
Sunshine, lollipops and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together. Brighter than a lucky penny when you're near the rainbows disappears near.
And here's another little song from Leslie Gore on Joy.
Melbourne's lovable radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Phil, Gordon and Chris. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us, and thank you, Philip, for the Simpsons references. There's lots more, I'm sure, that you can trot out.
One day you'll
later.
Give me the whole hour.
Do you reckon I'm probably the only person in Australia that's never seen an episode of The Simpsons?
You're the only one who admits it. Others probably try to fake it.
No, they...
Oh, I remember that episode.
They are still socially relevant after 30 years. One of the worst results of natural disasters like earthquakes, floods, fires and tsunamis is felt by civilians, emergency service workers, police, fire and ambulance, and even train drivers. They've all been exposed to traumatic events of such magnitude that the memory of the event takes years to fade or will affect personal behaviour forever. And this effect is known as post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. And it's really a mental injury. And some of the mental injuries can be fixed quickly and easily. Others take a long time. Armed forces personnel, of course, are, as we know from the recent Anzac Day references, are the largest group in our society to be so affected. And so I suppose we've got to really ask ourselves, how is it resolved?
On the television the other night, on the show that You Can't Ask That, they had a lot of army personnel on.
Yeah.
And they were asking about those sort of things on this thing. And it was a very, very interesting thing about what the army personnel were saying.
Yeah. Mm. And there must be a detuning or emptying out of the brain or something, because talking about things that hurt you or damage you like that can be useful, especially if you've got a good listener. And sympathy and comfort is another one. I mean, when you're a kid, your mum kisses your injury better and things like this, and you actually gradually learn to cope with life's little knocks, but it's the big knocks that are not the best thing.
But one problem you told us, as you become a man, that you just have to hold it in and bottle it up, and
man up.
Exactly the wrong thing to do.
Exactly.
Well, of course, the army personnel, defence personnel, are trained to go into war and to anticipate that all those horrible events are going to happen to them, and be prepared for it and sort of put it in the back of their mind, work their way through it. But it doesn't. It stays in the mind.
Well, they have to be trained how to not be soldiers. Come home and process the horrible things that they've seen and maybe done.
Yeah.
And somehow separate that from their now normal life.
Yeah. Well, they've got professionals that can do that, of course, psychiatrists and other mental health professionals. And the general community also has the benefit of Beyond Blue as a way of making people realise that there are sort of mental injuries that need to be repaired.
And it can often take somebody else to notice the symptoms and tell you or suggest to you maybe go and talk to somebody.
Yeah, but then in that case, you've got to be prepared to go and do it to get something done. It's not easy at all.
Now, Prince Harry recently was talking about the mental turmoil that he went through following the death of his mother some 20 years ago, and he has actually just resolved that in his mind.
Well, as he said, he repressed those feelings, and it would have been hard because he was 12, I think when she died.
Something like that, yeah.
And he wouldn't have known how to process that.
I think they were probably told, to stand there, look, you had to be stoic and you had to stand there and look as though...
Unflinching.
Well, look at them in the funeral footage.
Yeah, well, that's terrible.
That's as public as you can be. God, must have been the worst time.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, Harry grew up to be a soldier as part of his training, his education as a royal, and he's seen real action. So he's also seen a lot of people who've been physically injured, and they're being helped back to functionality with prosthetic limbs and devices to react with the nerves and muscles that still remain in their broken limbs. And in the games that he's partly involved with now is to provide some social and competitive aspects to living with prosthetics.
I think he was one of the main instigators in getting the Invictus Games going, really, because he knew so many soldiers that had been...
Yeah, although I think the American forces have already had a supporting organisation much like this as well.
Yeah, he had a good model to work on. And then if you've got a profile like his, do the right thing with it.
He's to be congratulated and applauded for doing exactly what he's done, because how many times you read where people have come home damaged from wars and things, and the government are willing to send them to fight in these terrible places, but they're not willing to look after them when they come home.
Yeah, it's a one-way street.
It certainly is. You're with Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy, 94.9.
And Phil.
Oh!
I wasn't going to say anything. I was just going to sit here and be offended.
You see, there I am. My mouth is on automatic.
Now I have PST.
Oh, you poor love.
I get tired and upset, and I'm trying to care a little less.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil?
We're here with Phil, Chris and Gordon to make up for the lost Phil.
Thank you very much, Phil. No,
with start of our radiothon appeal. Mm.
So do your thing.
Yes. So you can
renew your membership or join up now. Mm-hmm. We're in May. You got until the end of June to get in for the wonderful prize, which is
not
still
allowed to be
a secret.
Spoken about. Yeah. Yes. It's still a secret until next week. Yes.
Yes. Give that we may grow. Wrong telethon.
Wrong telethon.
Yeah, no. Yes. Give so we can stay on air.
Yes. Cost $2,700 right. an hour or something like that, doesn't it? Something.
It's very expensive. Very expensive. It's certainly not cheap. We might sound cheap, we might act cheap, but we don't come cheap.
We should also point out that we personally don't get paid for this entertainment that we provide.
Don't we? Oh, I thought my big check was coming.
Well, in that case, somebody's been ripping off my pay.
But you can go to the joy.org.au website and you can follow the prompts there and become a member and donate money to keep Joy on the air. That's the main thing to do because we still need Joy.
Yes, we do. Very well said. We should use that as a slogan.
Well, it is the slogan, actually. Well,
you heard it here first, almost.
Around about this time, there was an event that happened up in the northeast area.
Out in the Pacific Ocean.
Mm-hmm. Which we call the Coral Sea.
That's right. It's just out past Melanesia, out that way there.
Yes, it's actually beyond Noumea and Honiara.
That's right, out that way.
But it's still close enough.
It was close enough.
Because what happened at that? Why do we interested?
The Americans engaged the Japanese in a sea battle.
In World War II.
And if the Japanese had have won that, they would have had basically control of the whole South Pacific and Australia would have been in a bit of a mess.
Would have fallen to Japanese
forces. It could have fallen, yeah.
So, we might have ended up eating more sushi than we currently do.
Mm, yes, but it was just one of those things. But the Americans were able to actually defeat the Japanese fleet. And they did it from a long way out. It wasn't close-up battle because they could, with the new armaments that they had, they could be quite a way apart and still fire
the cannons
to that at the thing. They could be even over the horizon line, and they could still find them, you know. So
Whoa. Yes,
it was a very intense battle. About 600 people died,
Australian and Americans,
yes,
sailors.
Yeah, but there would have been a hell of a lot of PTSD coming out of that, I would imagine.
Ooh.
Yes,
that's if you survived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's one of the big things about the Second World War that actually saved Australia.
Mm.
One of the things, yes.
Australia had prepared for this, just as we're sort of going through a little bit of worry about North Korea.
Oh, God.
There were some advanced plannings within Australia that there was, if someone came down through New Guinea, well, that was going to be our first line of defence. But if they then got onto the mainland, well, there was the Brisbane Line.
The Brisbane Line, yes. They're going to burn everything beyond the Brisbane Line. So that the Japanese wouldn't have any food. That was one of the burnt earth policies.
Yeah. So everything north of Brisbane Line was going to be burnt, is what you're saying?
Well, and south. So if they did get through to as far as the Brisbane Line, there would be no food for them.
Wow, and for us as well, of course.
And for us as well, which would have meant we would have been in a hell of a position.
Yeah, never happened. That's an old wartime, not trick, but tactic.
Well, it's still being done as well, of course, in Syria and those places, you know, the way they're doing things there.
Well, in Kuwait, when our friends left, they burnt all the oil.
That's right.
Which would have done wonders for the atmosphere.
Oh, Lord, yeah. But the Coral Sea is a very interesting part of our history, but it's not very well known. Not much is written about it, but I believe the Premier of Queensland and Prime Minister Turnbull had a dawn service this morning.
Mm. You nearly said Trumbull.
Oh, well, I wasn't Donald Trump, was I?
An event that happened, the anniversary which occurred last weekend on the 28th of April, was an event that happened at Port Arthur, beautiful Port Arthur in the southern corner of Tasmania.
Yeah, I never got that far down south in Tasmania, I'm afraid. I only got as far as Hobart.
It's around the corner
from
Hobart.
You've still got to go further on down south.
Around the corner, yeah.
Yep.
And it was an old convict settlement there, and it's in pretty good condition. They built them well in those days.
Well, they had good labour, didn't they?
They had good labour and they had a good reason to keep them locked up.
Mm.
And the reason that they selected Port Arthur was because to get from Port Arthur back on to the mainland, you had to go across this little, very slim isthmus.
Yeah, an isthmus.
Isthmus.
Very isthmus.
a narrow neck of land, and they put guardhouse on that. And a few of the convicts, if they did escape, swam across the gap instead. But there was no Noahs there.
No.
Sneak off. But at that particular event on the 28th of April 1996, there was a horrific massacre of innocent men, women and children when a deranged person, I'm just being kind.
Well, he was a bit off his rocker, wasn't he?
He was deranged.
Yeah.
And we don't really need to name him, do we?
No.
Don't want to give him any coverage.
He began a killing spree, and I don't know why they call it a spree, because it wasn't a happy event. It was a very unhappy event. And at the end of the process, how many people were killed? I think there was...
35.
35, that's right. 35 men, women and children.
Children, yeah.
Which makes it the worst example in our country.
Yeah, and one good thing from it was the fact that it's one of the best things that John Howard ever did was to ban guns and have the gun amnesty, and everybody was handing in their guns and everything, which made Australia a hell of a lot safer.
It was, and it was an example for the rest of the world. The perpetrator is still locked up. And will be locked up for many a year yet.
I think he's been put away never to be released, isn't it? I think so.
Well, I think it should be.
There's no point releasing him, is there?
No. Mm. But among those killed were the family of Walter Mikak, his wife Nanette, and their two daughters, Madeline and 6-year-old Alana.
Mm.
And Walter Mikak became recognised as the face of the worst mass murder in Australian history, and he's the co-founder of the Alana and Madeline Foundation.
Mm, they raise money for...
Which was set up for the memory, in their memory, to provide support for children who are the victims of violent crime.
Mm,
And Crown Prince Mary of Denmark, a Taswegian, is the patron of that foundation.
Yes, that's very good. But it was a very, very dark moment in Australia's history, that's for sure, when you consider what he did. Yeah.
I can remember hearing that news. I was the service manager at an apple reseller in Dandenong.
All right.
And you hear the news coming through, and the biggest shock was when we actually found out that it was in Australia, because it just was never heard of anything on that scale.
It was something that sort of never really happened, did it? We had our own shooting here with in the Hoddle Street thing, but that was nowhere near as bad as Port Arthur. Mm. But it's always a blast to the way you think about the safety of your own person and other people when these things happen, because they sort of happen out of nowhere. It was the same with that fellow that drove the car up Bourke Street. You know, these things just happen, and they really sort of put a sense of...
You can't predict them.
You can't, no.
Be a really nasty person. Yeah. You know, all these horrible things become...
Yeah.
Mm.
Someone else who's had a birthday round about this time, we'll quickly talk about him. Keith Allen Haring, born on the 4th of May 1958, died when he was just 31 in 1990. He was an American artist and social activist whose work responded to the New York City street culture of the 80s by expressing concepts of birth, death, love, sexuality, and war. And you might have seen his works, but it's...
You would have seen them, Chris, with the AIDS Council. The AIDS Council, they have lots of Keith Haring's work that he did for AIDS.
And they're mainly simple objects or people with dots around them, with little rays.
And they're very bold. They're very bold shapes and colours, yes. And he did them very, very early in the epidemic when it started.
Mm. He diagnosed with AIDS in 1988, and he established a foundation, and its mandate was to provide funding and imagery to AIDS organisations and children's programs, and to expand the audience for Haring's work through exhibitions, publication, and the licensing of his images. He uses these images to speak about his own illness and generate activism and awareness about AIDS. And over 1,000 people went to his funeral service in the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York City. For a person of 31 years, he's left his mark. There's even a wall in Fitzroy?
Yes, there's a wall. When I first went to work with the AIDS Council, all his banners and posters were there. Quite amazing stuff.
They're simplistic, but they've got a very strong message.
Oh, boy, they hit you in the eyes. Yeah they certainly
and
do.
And it's good. It's a positive
thing. That's the way it's meant to work, yes.
Yeah. You're with Phil...
Yes.
Chris and Phil and Gordon. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Here's Tegan and Sarah.
I keep denying, begging for joy to your life. Joy 94.9.
Another event that occurred that we fought mentioned before was a bombing which occurred on the 30th of April 1999 in London.
Which is not that long ago, is it?
It is not. We were remembering it because some people were killed at this bombing in this gay pub, the Admiral Duncan pub. And it's the we've got the timeline of what occurred. But it was basically the bombing, the results of the bombing using a nail bomb carried out by a neo-Nazi, David Copeland. Now, it's not very nice to have it happen to anybody, but it was even not, it was even worse that it happened to us, but not that we are immune in any way. The rainbow flag can't protect us.
Doesn't protect anybody, really. But
as we've seen for those poor guys in Cheshire.
Yeah, and not only that, in Orlando in Florida.
That's right.
But the Copeland Hotel had a history of these sort of things happening to it, too, going right back to the time when it was first opened. And they were, somebody had almost did a bombing and set fire to it, and the fellow was sentenced to 8 years penal servitude in Australia.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so we get them all out here.
Well, we've said that it was bombing conducted by David Copeland, but it was actually his third bombing.
Did you think he had a phobia or something?
Well, he was a neo-Nazi, so I suppose that might have indicated a certain degree of inability.
Well, ethnic cleansing.
Yeah.
It's a popular term. To be on the end of that tag.
Well, the third bomb was on the 30th of April, but on the 17th of April that particular year in Brixton, South London, he had a bomb attack. And then on the 24th of April in Whitechapel, East London. But then on Thursday the 29th, this is the day before it actually occurred, there were certain things happening in the background. And though those previous bombings were actually described by the police as race hate attacks, they had issued a warning that a gay bar could potentially be the bomber's next target. And the Scotland Yard, and another pub in the area had displayed a poster warning customers to be alert. But then some CCTV from the Brixton, the 17th of April attack, was given wide publicity after an image on the suspected bomber was identified in it. And he must have seen that because he thought, well, they're closing in on me. I better get the next one up and running and happening.
Mm-hmm.
And he planted a bag with the bomb in the pub.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the patrons there actually noticed it. And the bomb exploded at 6:37 in a bag just as it was being investigated by the pub manager. And that's when the deaths occurred. But Copeland, the perpetrator, was captured by the police on the very same evening as the bombing because a work colleague of Copeland had recognised him from the previously published CCTV footage.
Right, yes.
And alerted police about an hour, 20 minutes before the bomb exploded. So Copeland was found later that night once the police obtained his home address, and he admitted immediately to carrying out all three bombings and was arrested. It was wrapped up and tied up fairly quickly. But among the speeches was one of the police assistant commissioners who undertook to maintain a crime scene van outside the pub to take witness statements and gather evidence until the perpetrator was actually brought to justice. And the van was to be staffed and was staffed entirely with openly gay and lesbian police officers.
Well, would have been done so that nobody would be scared of coming forth.
Well, true, but that actually marked a turning point for the previously often tempestuous relationship between the GLBT community and the Metropolitan Police.
Mm.
And the upshot of it all was
there's a happy ending.
Happy ending. Copeland was convicted of three murders and three offences of planting bombs and given six life sentences, one for each of these offences. His minimum sentence was 30 years, but recently, or a couple of years later, the High Court judge increased Copeland's minimum sentence to 50 years, stating this was necessary for the protection of the public. And Copeland's release will not occur until 2049 at the earliest, when he will be 73 years old.
That's if he survives that long. Hmm.
If he
happy
does.
Ending.
Happy ending.
He's well, in the cuckoo house.
Yeah.
But there it is.
It's the point that we, throughout the realms of history, the GLBTI community have always been targeted if anything looks like going wrong or something is that way, you know, it's just...
We're seen as an easy target.
We seem.
And if you're a neo-Nazi, you're not a great thinker of the world anyway.
No, that's true too.
Hey, I'm Darren Hayes, and you're on Joy, Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station.
And we love having you on our radio station too, Darren. He's a boy with an interesting history, Gordon.
Oh, very, very interesting. Queensland born. Born on his birthday's the 8th of May. So he's coming up for another birthday.
Yeah, he was born in the year 1972, so that makes him 45.
Woo. Oh, getting old, isn't he?
Isn't he
getting old?
He's older than colour TV.
Yeah. Is he really?
And that was 75.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yep. Phil, what do you know about Darren Hayes?
He came out of a savage garden.
Oh, no, he did
but
not.
But he survived. We came out of a group called Savage Garden.
Oh, of course.
Which had a great sound.
I didn't think they were Australian initially. It's a very international sound.
Yeah, it was a great sound they had. But they they split up after about 3 years or so. They weren't together very long, were they?
No, they hit the top quickly.
Yep.
And probably fizzled out.
Number two in the one in Australia, two in the UK, and three in America. So they did pretty well with their Savage Garden.
Yeah, it says some good lyrics though, because it's "Ooh, I want you, but I don't know if I need you." It's a very interesting statement.
Well, of course, they were aiming for the general listening community.
Mm.
That could have been kids of that particular age. I don't. Oh, sorry, kids. But I think a lot of songs are marketed for particular listening groups. But Darren has actually gone out on his own now.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder what group he is aiming for these days.
He actually married his girlfriend, they'd been friends for many, many years. Oh, and he married her.
When he was 22, they were separated by the time he was 26.
Yes, the marriage only lasted for about 4 years, yeah.
Yeah, and they formally divorced when Darren was 28. And, you know, just makes you wonder whether some people really should have got together to begin with. But anyway, I'm not being critical of that.
No.
Because he had other pressures on him, because he started coming out just after that divorce formalised.
And then he moved to London, where he's occupying now.
That's right. Mm. And in 2006, he entered into a civil partnership with his boyfriend of that time. And then about 7 years later, they went to LA, and that's where they got formally married in the US.
Because by then, the US were allowed to have married couples, like we're still waiting to happen here in Australia. Thank you very much, all you idiots.
He's a Star Wars buff, would you believe? Well, he is a child of that era.
Oh, I think everybody's a Star Wars buff.
Except me, except Gordon.
Oh, I don't know. I think on the 4th of May, you have a moment's thought.
Yes.
May the 4th be with you.
Ithmuth and 4th. Yes.
What's like, how would you not like a name like Chris Smith? Because every December 15th, you'd get Christmas presents.
Thank you. Oh, golly.
Nothing wrong with my speech.
No. Put your tape back in.
Suffer and suck attack.
Oh, yes.
Suffer and suck attack.
Yeah. Oh, look, thanks for being with us today. We've enjoyed this little show, fixing up the little glitchette that went to air last week. But here we are. We'll be back next week. And we need to say thank you to a couple of people, though. We need to say thank you to Cupcake.
Oh, yes.
He's not a people.
No, Cupcake.
He's a four-legged people.
Little doggy, yes. I hope he's still not chewing the furniture for
Nuna. She isn't. No.
No, yeah.
No, she looks so quiet, stretched out there.
Sound asleep on the photo we got here.
On the satin sheets, so I don't know.
Oh, Nina, I think you spoil Cupcake somewhere along the line there, dear. Yes. The same as I know Philip spoils Eddie, so it's all right. I think this is what happens when you have a puppy dog.
Well, he's the boss.
He's the boss, yes. Yeah, that's true too. And we've also got to thank Julia. Julia does our podcasting, which is a wonderful thing to do too. So you can
give you another chance to listen to our quality material.
Yeah, very much so.
Or the stuff that we do each week.
Thank you, Philip. Let's go out with Darren Hayes, because of your birthday, he's popular, and so are birthdays sometimes. You're on Joy 94.9. Been there, done that.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I've got a plan to make it rich and famous. Lucky for me, for you.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.